You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is John Elter J. Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullen.
It is another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio, hosted by the internet's driest radio personality, Kelsey Muller from Vancouver, British Columbia. And joining me, as always, is the colorful and animated Brendan Lear from Edmonton, Alberta.
Sorry, call for matching you, Kelsey.
Is that sorry? You doing my impersonation of me there? Or?
Yeah, it's early here. We're kicking this early for the weekend.
Yeah, it's definitely early, 1 hour earlier for me, I should add, for anyone who wants to sympathize with me. So if we sound flatter than normal, I should say, it's because the coffee hasn't kicked in yet, but...
I think I fell asleep driving to work today.
Yeah, crazy.
Traffic, so I didn't really notice.
You said there was tons of snow in Edmonton?
Well, it's snowing, which means that, every time it snows here for the first couple times. Even though it snows for 5 months of the year, people seem to forget...
How to drive?
These types of things occur and, tend to drive in very erratic, nonsensical fashions.
Yeah, see, we don't really get any snow in Vancouver, so can't really complain, but it's absolutely pissing rain today.
I hear you get bed bugs, though.
Yeah, bed bug epidemic in certain parts of Vancouver, but...
Isn't that one of the... I haven't read the Old Testament in a long time, but wasn't that one of the plagues on the Egyptians, bed bugs?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think they would have been called bed bugs in the Old Testament, though, but...
Well, I don't know. Stone tablet where you sleep bugs?
If it starts raining frogs today, then we're in big trouble.
Let me know.
Brendan, it's going to be a good show. The interview we taped with Dean Thomas, and for people who haven't heard it yet, obviously, it is probably, Brendan, I think we're in agreement, one of the better interviews that we've done as far as an athlete who's just, says what's on his mind, animated. It was a great interview, and people should stay tuned. He shares all his thoughts about The Ultimate Fighter, what's coming up for him in the UFC, etc. So stay tuned for that, because it is a really good interview. And you're not going to say anything about the interview? Help me out here, bro.
I'm in full agreement.
Right.
Full agreement. I think one of the best. D. Thomas, great guy. Very well spoken.
And then,
very insightful.
Yeah. And then afterwards, we'll talk about the IFL. It's a little early. I've just had a chance to skim over the results from last night. But we'll talk a little bit about the IFL after we talk to Dean, and as well, we'll do our Pride picks and talk about that tournament. It's a great card. So stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit bodogfight.com for more details.
The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans. You listen to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now from sunny Florida, I'm assuming he's in Florida still, is Mr. Dean Thomas. Dean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Real good.
Dean, of course, is going to be taking on Rich Clemente at the Ultimate Fighter 4 Season 4 Finale, November 11th. And, Dean, my first question for you, on the website, it's listed that you guys are going to be fighting at 155. Is that correct, or are you going to be at 170?
Nah, this fight's going to be at 155. I think me and Rich were both pretty happy to go back down to 155.
Okay.
I think actually we probably only did the show at 170 because it was at that weight.
Yeah, because I thought I remember on one of the episodes you alluding to the fact that you had considered staying at 170. Did you say that, or have you changed your mind? Or
no, I mean, you know, honestly, I will stay anywhere they want me to fight, you know. But I think, for me, I have a better shot at getting the title at 155. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all about getting fights and you know, putting on a good show. Of course, you know, I want to get the title, and I'm going to have a better shot at 155. But, I mean, if they want me to stay at 170, then that's what I have to do.
Dean, I have to say congratulations, first of all, on the news that you were awarded your black belt.
Oh, you know what, man? I've been training jiu-jitsu a long time, you know. But I was never really able to stay consistent at training just pure jiu-jitsu because of I've always been fighting. So, I mean, it was a big accomplishment for me to get that black belt finally after so many years. And, I mean, honestly, it's probably one of my biggest accomplishments personally, you know, in my career, I think.
Now, going in against someone like Rich Clemente, Dean, you got to see him a lot, obviously, through the show, training all the time, etc. What's the game plan going to be going up against a guy like Rich?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I kind of have to see what Rich is going to come out doing. I mean, I watched a few of his fights. I probably shouldn't have because I'm a little scared now. But, you know, Rich is a strong guy. He's very explosive. He's got a lot of skills standing up and on the ground. So, I mean, you know, I got some things that I kind of want to work on him. But, I mean, you never know if it's going to work on a guy like Rich because he is really good at everywhere. So I just have to go out there and see if I can't create some openings and make them weak.
Yeah.
So is this a unique experience for you? It's not like you're fighting a guy you've never, you've seen a few of his fights on tape, but you guys actually train together. So is the preparation going to be, maybe he's going to do this, maybe he's going to do that? What kind of mental preparation is that like for someone who you literally train with and you know so well?
Well, the funny thing is me and Rich, we had actually trained a long time ago, probably about 7 years ago. He came to my school when I had school in Orlando, and me and him trained together then. And we had, on the show, because we were on different teams, we'd only actually trained together one time. And that was for when I fought Chris, so we got together, me and Rich got together, when they had just trained. And we weren't really going all that hard. So it wasn't a really good indication of his skill level, or mine for that matter. So, I mean, it actually just kind of complicates things a little bit more because, you know, and I think that's what happened when I fought Chris is we had trained together so much and I thought that he would do certain things that he didn't do. So I try not to look at those training experiences and think that it'll come out the same way. I have a feeling that Rich will come out a lot different than how we trained on the show.
Dean, you know, as they wrap up the fourth season of The Ultimate Fighter, it's always interesting to hear fighters' points of view and their perspectives afterwards. And being away from the show now for a little while, what's life been like post Ultimate Fighter? Has there been a big difference for you as far as walking through the streets, people recognizing, etc.? Is it pretty much the same?
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially in my town because I don't come from a major city. So where I live, you know, it's a little over 100,000 people, but I think 90,000 people watch the show because they know I'm on it. So it's like everywhere I go in my city, you know, it's I'm kind of a celebrity now. So it's been pretty crazy, you know, and I'm pretty happy that I don't think I made a fool of myself too much on the show. So I mean, I was happy about that.
One of the interesting things about this show is the fights, people have been critical, the fights haven't been phenomenal, but there have been a lot of interesting interactions between the fighters and the celebrity coaches that they bring in, like Rich Franklin's and the Matt Hughes. How much, in your recollection, how much of the way those interactions were portrayed as being realistic in terms of people being antagonistic to both Hughes and Franklin, and how much of that was just sort of cut in to, sort of make a good show?
So I gotta tell you, first off, you know, everybody's really critical of the fight so far this season, but I'm gonna tell you, man, when we were there watching the fights live, man, they seemed a lot better than how they looked on TV. Cause on TV, you know, without the commentary and the crowd behind it, it looks kinda weak, you know? And I think that has a major effect on how a fight can turn out when it's just like in some some quiet room and two guys just throwing, because you don't really get the full effect of it. Because when we were, especially that first fight between Shoney and Rich, you were like, wow, man, this is an awesome fight. But when you saw it on TV, it was kind of, it looked kind of dull. But, so, I mean, that was my major thing with the fight, is that, I mean, it's hard to show a really good fight in that type of environment on TV, in my opinion.
Now, when it seems kind of weird with no one cheering or no one, except for the fighters themselves.
Yeah, and all you hear is like Matt Serra in the back. And believe her, Matt Serra's a great coach, but I honestly think they turned up his microphone a little bit because, yeah. But, as far as the coaches go, the best coaches and all that stuff, for us, it wasn't, you know, I guess, you know, when people see that, they expect us to like, you know, kiss these guys' asses. And for us, it's not like that because, I mean, especially like Rich, I mean, I've known Rich for a long time. I mean, we've been in the same circuit for a long time. I mean, I remember when Rich was first getting started, so it's not like, I mean, I know he's a champ, and I think he's a hell of a fighter, but, you know, I'm not going to kiss his ass just because he's a champ, because I've known this guy before he was a champ. I mean, he had, at the time, he had one loss on his record, and I was there when he lost. So, I mean, it's not like I'm looking up to these guys like they're gods, you know, and nobody on the show did. So, I mean, that was the thing with that. Now, on the show, they portrayed us as, like, really talking bad about these guys and everything. I mean, honestly, we kind of did, because, I mean, at the time, you know, you gotta think of it like this. You know, we didn't do anything, and the only thing we had to talk about was what we went through in that day. It wasn't like we could sit back and talk about the new movies that came out or what we just saw on TV. All we had to talk about was what we did that day. And if Rich Franklin gave Matt Serra some advice that none of us agreed with, we probably talked about that for about 4 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you're put in a situation like that, and then everybody goes, oh, man, you know, Matt Serra talks behind people's back, well, obviously, because we ain't got nothing else to talk about. So, I mean, that's what that's all about, really.
Well, I think, Dean, the comments that most stand out in a lot of people's minds now is the comments from yourself and a few others and Matt Serra, obviously, in reference to Matt Hughes, because he's been on the show before as a coach. And you know, I think there was one episode where you make a comment to George St. Pierre saying, you know, man, you got to kick his ass. How much of that is again, editing, building upon Matt Hughes was, you know, after his first season on as a coach, people had come out and said, well, they're trying to portray him as a bad guy. And even people like Rob McDonald had come on the program, our show, and said that, you know, Matt Hughes is a very genuine character, he's a nice guy, and that's partially the show's editing. What was your experiences with Matt?
We drilled Matt. We none of us really got along with him, so to say. Now, I'm not saying that he's not a nice guy. I'm just saying he's got this attitude. I mean, you know, as a champion, you kind of have to have a little arrogant attitude, because to be on top of everybody for so long, there's a reason why. It's because you step on some guys to get there. And I think that just kind of relates in his normal life. It kind of carries over into his normal life. So I really believe he kind of steps on some people and rubs people the wrong way. The comments, he made a lot of comments on the show, believe it or not. I mean, I was actually surprised that they put the one that he said about me. But I mean, some of the stuff he said was even worse than that. But, and I don't think that he meant it to degrade me as much as he meant it as just trying to be funny. And I think Matt is not a comedian, you know what I'm saying? So it always comes off a little bit wrong when he says something, because I think that he just has a weird sense of humor. You know, them guys in Iowa may have think that some of that stuff is funny, but, you know, most people don't, you know what I'm saying? And I don't think that he, you know, is like that to try to degrade me or anything like that. I just think that he's just not that funny of a guy, and he just tries to make jokes.
Was the interaction between Hughes and St. Pierre as uncomfortable as it seemed on TV?
Oh, yeah, it was pretty weird, actually. I mean, and even that got a little worse. Honestly, you know, at one point, you know, they were in the training center together, and Matt would say something to him, and St. Pierre would just be like, and St. Pierre is he's kind of a naive little kid, in a sense. I mean, he almost has like the attitude of like a high school kid that just trains really hard, you know, that doesn't do anything else but train. And Matt would like take little cheap shots at him, and it was pretty like, man, George, you gonna take that shit from this guy, you know? And George would just be like, nah, don't worry, we're gonna eventually fight, so I'm not really worried about it, you know. I don't really want to talk to him, I don't really want to see him. And I'd be like, man, don't take that shit from him.
Well, let me ask you then, Dean. I mean, you probably saw, I'm assuming you saw UFC 63 when Matt Hughes beat BJ Penn, and George St. Pierre came in the ring, and there's been a much ado about him saying that he wasn't impressed with Matt Hughes' performance, and he's gone to great lengths, George St. Pierre has, since that time, to apologize for those comments and reassured people that he went backstage and apologized again to Matt Hughes for those comments. Do you think he really should have then? I mean,
I don't think he should have apologized. I mean, Matt hasn't really been the nicest guy to him and has been the most respectful guy to him. I think, you know, maybe he really wasn't impressed by his performance and he just broke his mind, and I don't think he should have apologized for it. Yeah. I think that, you know, he should have just left it the way it was, and then they would have fought, and then maybe Matt could have impressed him, you know, when they fought. And if he did, then, you know, George would have won. But if I was George, I wouldn't apologize. Because, I mean, like I said, you know, Matt really wasn't, you know, didn't care about how he felt about him when they talked.
Jim, describe to me what the relationship is with you. You have your own school. You're a member of the American Top Team, but you have your own school. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, I have my own school. I'm about an hour and a half away from the main school, and, you know, there's a few other schools, you know, scattered in the South Florida area, but the main school is, like, where everybody kind of comes together to train on certain days of the week. I get down there as much as I can to train because it's a lot of good guys in the room. It's an incredible room. I mean, you got to see it some days. You look around, you're like, wow, it's like the who's who's of MMA, you know. On a universal level, not just within UFC, but like within, you know, like we got fighters in Pride and K1 and just all over the place. So it's definitely pretty impressive.
Dean, let's get back into your career again. You know, looking back at when you left the UFC after UFC 41, the split decision over Matt Serra, which is 2003, did you think, Dean, that it was going to be 3 years until you were going to be back fighting in the UFC again? At the time?
Honestly, you know, when I left and I told myself, you know, I'd probably never fight for the UFC again because of just the way it worked out. And it wasn't that I was mad at them, but I actually thought they were mad at me. So I really thought, you know, they're never going to use me again. And, you know, I figured that I'd give it one more shot because I was going to fight in Pride. They were going to give me a fight in Pride. So I figured I'd give it one more shot to fight in Pride. But then this show came along and, you know, it just worked out. I mean, everything just kind of, you know, the funny thing is if you just let life do what it's supposed to do, everything works out. So sometimes I just sit back and ride it.
When you say you thought that they might be mad at you, maybe expand on that a bit, clarify. Why did you think that?
You know, I've always, not always, but every once in a while, you know, when I'm given the opportunity to speak, I speak my mind, and sometimes I'll say things that, you know, that some people don't like. And at the time, I wasn't really feeling the direction that the UFC was going. And I thought that they were punishing guys for being, you know, technical fighters as opposed to just spectacle fighters. And, you know, and I was made myself clear on that at the time. And I'd always say, listen, you know, they're punishing me for, you know, trying to fight, you know, a technical fight. And I'm a technical fighter. So I thought, you know, they may have taken some of my comments and, you know, they're like, screw this guy. We're never using him again. Screw him.
You mean more because of the...
Certainly not the only person who articulated those thoughts, though.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I don't really necessarily think it's them, so to say, because, you know, I know Dana White and Joe Silva, and I really think that they appreciate a technical fight. It's just, you know, when they know that the fans sometimes don't appreciate it, they can kind of be like, oh, man, damn, you know, y'all got to do better than that, you know. So I understand where they're coming from, and, you know, I don't fault them for, you know, if you got a fight that's not as flashy. You know, you got two guys, you know, really technicians trying to work. You know, that doesn't make for the prettiest fan fight sometimes. And I understand where they're coming from because they really want, you know, people to grow on this and people to really watch and tune in. And if people don't understand what's going on, they're not going to tune in. So I ain't mad at them for thinking that way.
So you're alluding more to the rule changes and the stand-ups and trying to advance position on the grounds, things like that, that you think took away from the technical?
Well, definitely. I think that, you know, I think that if there's a problem with the fighters, it shouldn't be a problem with the fighters. They just need to alter the rules a little bit. I mean, if guys are on the ground and nothing's happening, stand them up, you know. And I'm not against the idea of giving stalling penalties and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, don't really blame the fighters. Just change the rules a little bit to make guys want to work harder and put on a better show.
Well, you're one of the fighters that are, have been around definitely for quite some time. You've been involved in mixed martial arts somewhat since even the fledgling days of mixed martial arts. Maybe, Dean, just tell us a little bit about your thoughts on how the sport's evolved, and even for yourself in your own skill set. What have you tried to work on as you've seen the game evolve over the last, say, 5 years?
Yeah, I think the game has evolved tremendously. I mean, it just keeps evolving, and I think the fighters are getting a lot better. And, I mean, even at the lower levels, I think the fighters are a lot better and much more technical. At the time, when I first got into the game, I was the first time I went to Japan, and I looked backstage and I saw these Japanese guys. And I was like, wow, man, these guys are so good compared to the guys in the U.S. on a general level. But now it's not like that anymore. Now it's like, you know, you can go to a smaller show here and see some high-level talented guys, you know, really preparing themselves to fight. And before it was, you know, you go to a show, you know, when I first got started, it'd be maybe three or four good guys and the rest of everybody was just trash. So I think on a wide scale, the competition now is a lot better. Guys are much more well-rounded on their feet and on the floor and just well-versed everywhere.
Dino, now that you've fought under all sorts of rules, obviously, and now we've seen Pride's first promotion in the States using those type of unique rules, what combination, I think, do you think of elbows and knees do you think should be used in mixed martial arts? What do you think provides the best possible show for spectators, and which would be your preference if you were making a unified set of rules?
I don't mind the elbows, honestly. I think the elbows are cool with me. I'm okay with the elbows. What I don't like is the, in Pride, I don't really dig the kicking on the ground. And I think it's just a little too dangerous. And it's funny because, like, I'll read on the internet guys that go, oh man, we need kicking on the ground. I'm like, well, you're obviously not a fighter, you know what I'm saying, who's been in that situation on the ground. I think it's, you know, I think the kicking on the ground is just, I'm against that, you know what I'm saying. I'm cool with the elbows, but the kicks on the ground, I'm totally against that.
Well, the debate on the elbows is resurfaced again because it sounds like Uriah Faber won his fight on account of an elbow this weekend, and even Terry Treblecock, the King of the Cage promoter, was quoted as saying that he has expressed some doubts about whether or not elbows should be continued in the use of mixed martial arts. What do you say to someone who argues, Dean, that those fights that end versus elbows and cuts are just taking away from the actual fight itself and evaluating who is truly the winner?
Well, you know, that's true. I mean, I don't stand so strong on the point to say that elbows, I mean, I'm not a strong supporter or fan of elbows. I don't have a problem with them, you know. It's unfortunate sometimes the fights, because I thought the Joe Stevens and Eve Edwards fight would have been a much better fight had he not got cut. I don't think he was hurt. I think it was just an elbow that cut him, and that fight was stopped because of that. Elbows can be dangerous, and I think that, one thing that needs to be researched a little more, is still a growing sport, is still evolving, is the way to defend them. And I think that once guys figure out a better way to defend them, that we can, you know, they won't be cut anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. And it'll put an end to all that, you know, stopping fights because of elbows.
Brennan, you have anything else for Dean?
That's it, Dean. Good luck in your upcoming fight, and good luck to everyone at the American Top Team. You guys have a number of great fights coming up, so... Good luck in your training.
Oh, yeah, we got Jeff Munson coming up. Jeff Munson coming up to fight Tim Sylvia. Oh, man, you know, Marcus Aurelius fighting Gomi this week, and Kang fighting in Pride in the tournament. I mean, we got a lot of big stuff coming up, and I appreciate you guys looking out and giving us the support, man. You know, you're the reason why the sport is growing the way it is, man, and I thank you guys.
Well, I appreciate it, Dean. And, Dean, one last thing, buddy. I mean, with this newfound fame given of the Ultimate Fighter, what's the thought here about maybe bringing back the outfit, your rap group?
Man, in fact, I was talking to my homie the other day, and I'm supposed to go in December to cut a little joint with them, so, you know, you may be hearing about that soon. I gotta book my ticket now so that I don't back out of this, but I really want to do it in December, so hopefully by the beginning of next year sometime I'll have a little LP coming out or something.
Sweet.
You know?
Well, next time you're on the show, Dean, then we can have your intro music, one of your songs.
Oh yeah, that's what's up. That's what's up,
Dean. I don't think you're reading between the lines. My friend Cassie, or as he's known in Edmonton, Crowbar, I think is fishing for an invitation to come cut my hair.
Oh man, you know, whatever. You know what I'm saying? I'm down for whatever, man. So you tell them what's up.
Sweet.
Tell them to call me.
All right, Dean. Take care, man, and best of luck.
All right, guys, man. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Have a good one.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you. The Debate.
This guy does not have time to sit down like you're doing, watch the replay, think about it. You know, it's not like he can sit back and, you know, Monday quarterback it or whatever the hell, I'm sure, Monday whatever you call it.
The Discussion.
Well, for us, with Brendan and I both being Canadians, we care to say Hockey Night in Canada hit when we're talking about analysis. A little different than Monday Night Football. We're not too familiar.
There you go. Sure, whatever you damn conduct. Cold weather, man. You got it tough. But don't worry. Global warming, you guys are going to be the place to be in like 10 more years. It's going to be so hot here in Vegas, so I'm going to have to move to Canada.
Full Contact Fighter Radio. More bang for your loony than a six-pack for a toonie. And if you've never been to Canada before, loonies and toonies are what Canadians refer to their $1 and $2 coins as. It's a long, long story.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and hopefully everyone is in agreement now with what I said in the top of the show as far as that interview with Dean Thomas. Great guy. Some interesting comments in it about Matt Hughes, George St. Pierre, Matt Serra, everything, you know, and looking forward to seeing him fight coming up next weekend against Rich Clemente.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a good fight. Did you watch the wrap-up of the UFC reality show last night?
I did. I watched it, and, you know, very dominating performance with Patrick Cote. Obviously wasn't able to stop Edwin, but it really looked like Edwin had nothing as far as any route where he could win the fight. You know, the stand-up, he looked intimidated by Cote. He was willing to go with him for a bit at the beginning, but it seemed like after Cote landed a couple of hard shots, especially in the second round, he started to find his range, and then his takedown attempts, Edwin Dewey's takedown attempts were always stuffed, reversed. Didn't look like at any point he was going to come close to submitting Cote. I think at one point he got one leg up on Cote's shoulder, but impressive performance for Cote. And now, yeah, we can finally talk about all this stuff because there was always a huge outcry if he even hinted that one athlete or fighter might do well. And I had certainly heard many rumors that Patrick Cote had done extremely well in the show. And it'll be an interesting fight against Travis Luter. We'll get into the picks next week, Brendan, but do you think Cote can beat Travis Luter?
I was impressed with Cote's performance last night to an extent, but he failed to take that, you know, failed to take that final step and finish Dewey's, you know. And I think, I don't know whether he was just fighting a very conservative fight and he thought he could just dominate him and get the win by decision, but it didn't look like he was trying to finish the fight in a number of different times. So when he tried to put the put the Kimura on, you know, I think that was a really half-hearted attempt. So he didn't lose position, but still was trying to go for a submission. You know, I think the straight armbar is wide open there, and I don't think he went. He failed to go for that. And it's not like he doesn't have good jiu-jitsu. So I think he's going to have to pull out all the stops in his next fight. But I certainly a dominating performance, and maybe that's the strategy you had going in, just to dominate in all aspects and pull out the decision.
What are your thoughts looking back on this season as far as where would you rank it as compared to the other ones?
You know, I thought it was going to be the most exciting because these guys are probably more comfortable in their own skin, but maybe the young guys, you know, I find this is not has nothing to do with fighting. This has more to do with my shallowness as a sometimes watcher of reality TV. Maybe the young guys are still such punks that they're more, you know, they're more raw and they're more authentic.
you know, because there's nothing better than a combination of sort of older, mature guys and young, dumb, cocky punks. You know, in terms of pure entertainment value, and these guys are all, you know, seasoned fighters, and you know, they're all cool with one another, and they're all buddies. So I would say that this one, the only one that was more boring was the with Rich Franklin and Matt Hughes. I think you got to say that this is the first season, not just because it was unique at the time, but the personalities really meshed really well, and they had a lot of, you know, they had the spritzer, the cat smashing spritzer, they had you know, the sort of jock and Koscheck and all sorts of different
Southworth, yeah.
I think they meshed, yeah. You know. Although they seem to pull these guys, out of some wacky way. I don't think anyone from the first season is actually fighting where they fought in the first season in terms of weight categories.
I think, to be honest, that what happened in the first season, which everybody remembers, and so many people tuned into that show and became mixed martial arts fans because of that show, I think that kind of chemistry, or I guess it's not really chemistry, but the drama that accompanied that show, I think is probably gone forever. In the sense that I think if it was to happen again, it probably will be sort of put on or fake, you know what I mean? Because I think some fighters might hear the kind of comments that we're making, and it's certainly not just us who are making those kind of comments.
Well, and you hear comments of the people that we've talked to, you know? I tried out for the show, and, you know, they didn't like my personality. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What's the show about, you know?
I just think that at this point, it's become such a polished... I think any fighters that go on to that program now know that they're going to wind up fighting in the UFC, regardless if they win the actual show or not, that it's kind of become a polished, you know, professional show. Everyone goes on, they're aware of the fact that they could go on to celebrity, go on to fight in the UFC regardless. So it just seems like everybody goes in and it's very professional, which is fine from the fighter's standpoint, but whether or not it makes for good TV is a different question.
Yeah, well, the problem is that whenever greasy TV executives get involved with anything, then the essence of the show is diminished. So I'm sure there's lots of quiet guys who could go on, and you know, their personalities kind of come out, but after a while, they just aren't being picked because they're probably superior fighters, but they're thinking, this guy's not going to do anything or piss on anyone's bed or, you know, run through a wall. But I think, you know, like you said, if they feign some kind of you know, personality quirk to get on the show, that's already undermined the whole process. So they should really just pick the best fighters and throw them all together, and I think just let them go. Because you can't try and make, you know, anytime you try and fake reality, you know, it's more than evident of what's going on. I think people aren't that stupid, so.
And like I said, and we've talked about this prior, it's the fact that all the fighters are very keenly aware of the fact that the show has actually become a feeder system for the UFC. And I don't think they realized that so much in the first season. So I think that much more was at stake. And, you know, I'm not criticizing some of these fighters because they know that they're going to get opportunities. Even if it's not in the UFC, people are going to be, you know, they can be advertised as someone who's on, you know, the reality television show.
Yeah.
So I just think that guys in general are just not... You know, we've seen in the last few seasons where guys, you know, aren't really, if they lose, it's some of them, it's a big deal for some of them, but for others, it's, yeah, well, whatever, you know.
Yeah. I don't think that they have as much invested as the guys from the first season did, and they see what kind of opportunities are available to them anyway, so.
Well, apparently next season's format is rumored to be all lightweights, all one division, so maybe because it's going to be much more competitive from that standpoint, because it's clearly just going to be one division and only one or two guys can make it to the semi or to the finals, and then maybe that will add for some more drama. I don't know.
Yeah, I prefer to see that. I don't know why. You know, if the show is really about fighting, then you know, to allow the guys' personalities to come out a little bit more. You don't sequester them. You know, like prisoners in the house. You know, that sort of feigned drama, but. Why don't they let them go out and do what they want to do?
Yeah,
you know.
That's a good
point. Why don't they show them going out to the casino? And you know, some guys are in there to train hard, and some guys go out and get, you know, get loaded, and, you know, start brawls on the strip. That's good reality TV right there.
That's true.
It's kind of a combination of cops, Vegas, and the UFC. You know, and then you have guys that stay home and and train and work out and work hard, and that, you know, that's much more interesting to me.
Yeah.
Than having this sort of Oz-type sequesterment of these fighters. Because, who wants to watch, Charles McCarthy eat for 10 minutes and then, everyone pick on him?
Or have the inevitable food war that seems to happen every season, though.
Yeah, so they wrecked the house. Who cares?
I am going to miss Matt Serra. Hopefully they bring him back because, he became one of... Just off the cuff, without even thinking, I found myself at work, like, there we go, Drago. You're looking beautiful, Drago. And anytime I said nice for about the first month after watching the program, nice, Drago.
I would say, I have to say that I wasn't too keen on Matt Serra before, but he has grown on me by leaps and bounds.
Oh, for sure, man. I think Dean Thomas have become definitely favorites with a lot of people.
Yeah, and... I think it's just a matter of time till we see him, throw down with Lane Mall. I can't see it ever happening, but it would be great.
All right, well, let's quickly talk about the IFL. Like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we just woke up today, so I haven't had a lot of time to review the actual results or read any in-depth reports on the fights yet, so I apologize for that. From looking at just the flat results, some immediate ones stand out, and of course, the biggest one, Mike Whitehead stopping Mark Kerr in 2 minutes and 40 seconds with strikes.
Yes, big upset. I guess a real upset for me would be Benjavar.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say a real upset, but... he's fighting up a weight class at 155. He lost by split decision, so obviously one judge gave it to him. But, yeah, I there's no doubt that Menjivar was the favorite, I would say. Most people would have had him as a favorite.
But Kerr, I'm not sure. It would be interesting to see. I wonder if when they're going to air it on Fox. Apparently it's going on Fox on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah.
Fox Sportsnet.
Yeah.
I wonder if that whole show or if they're going to divide it up into a number of different shows.
Oh, I'm sure they will. But, when you look at some of the other names, there wasn't too many surprises, really. I guess some people might... Matt Horwich beating Mike Pyle, both guys great middleweight fighters, so that's not a huge upset. But Aaron Stark beat Alex Schoenhauer. Aaron Stark, I think, was 2-2 before he took on Schoenhauer, so that could be kind of deemed a bit of an upset. But really, when you look at it, Roy Markham won, Joe Dirksen won, Ben Rothwell, Chris Hordecki, Christoph Szczesny beat Devin Cole, Alan Goez beat Daniel Gracie, but... no huge shocking results there. I'm looking forward to watching it on Sportsnet up here in Canada. I'm really excited. Well, let's get into it. Let's talk about Pride Bushido, of course, this weekend. Let's make our picks. First fight I want to talk about, actually, one thing that I think a lot of people know now, but Gilbert Melendez, one of the better 155-pound fighters from the States, he's not going to be fighting. His replacement's been named as Clay French, who I don't know a lot about, but that's too bad that Gilbert won't be fighting Shinya Aoki.
Yeah, that was scheduled to be a good fight, so that's kind of disappointing from the American perspective, because there's how many other American fighters are in there? Only two, maybe.
Well, the first fight we could talk about is Marilla Bustamante versus Yun Dun Sik, I believe, if I'm pronouncing it right, Yun Dong Sik. Some of these fights. There's like the Swedish fighter who's taking on Ishiro Maeda. Some of those fights, I just don't like picking because some of the European fighters, you can look at their track record or you can look at their fight record, rather, and you can maybe read the odd report, etc., that have with scant reviews about what they may or may not be capable of doing. So I kind of hate making predictions on those kind of fights. I personally like making predictions on fights with... Fighters,
we should make it a policy, at least when picking fights, to not talk about fighters that we've never seen.
Well, yeah.
We have seen Yun Dong Sik quite a bit, in his last. And his first fight against Sakuraba didn't look too great, but he's actually slowly, he's one of these Nastula types, I think, that's slowly on the uptake. And his fight against Quentin Jackson, everyone criticized Jackson for looking bad in that fight, but I think Dong Sik showed some good work in that fight, and I think he's scheduled to break out. Whether it's going to be against Murillo, I don't think so.
No, I don't think there's any way that he beats Murillo Bustamante. Just can't see it happening, even though you're right, he has shown some remarkable progress. And Takanori Gomi versus Marcus Aurelio, of course, in the rematch fight coming up, Marcus Aurelio tapping out. Takanori Gomi rendering him unconscious with a sidearm triangle choke. And then he went on to lose to Maeda. you know, I, personally, I think Aurelio should have been given a championship shot prior to this, and now some of the luster behind this has been lost because of the fact that he's lost to Maeda since, and Gomez gone on to fight again as well. So better timing by Pride if they had just done a quick, fast turnaround championship fight for this, you know.
Well, I think it would have been better if they would have made the original fight a title fight.
Like, or that as well, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand really Pride, though, what their prerogative, why they take that prerogative to be able to make certain fights non-title fights. I can see it if it's a, you know, a freak show match, you know, like the open weight tournament, so should Vanderlei have lost his title? Well, obviously not. But, again, if you're fighting, you know, why wasn't the Coleman-Fedor fight for a title? It makes no sense to me.
I guess I should say, like, Aurelio fought Ishida, not Maeda, right?
Yes.
Right. Well, anyways, I mean, let's break it down. What are you picking in this fight, then?
I have an uneasy feeling about Gomi. And I know everyone's on the, you know, over the last couple of years, I've billed him as potentially the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. But I've never been, I guess I've never, I, after seeing his fight with BJ Penn, and how dominant Penn was in that fight, I don't have the kind of confidence in Gomi that everyone else does. That being said, can really pull this out? Can he pull it out again? I'm not sure. I gotta go with Gomi in this. But again, I don't see him as being the overwhelming favorite in this fight, not by a long shot, or at least a lock. I think he's the favorite, but yeah, I don't think he's a lock. But I gotta go with Gomi just because I think if he gets his stand up working, if he gets a shot working, then Aurelio is going to be in for a tough night.
Yeah, it was Mitsuhiro Ishida. Aurelio just lost to by unanimous decision at Pride, Ishida 11. But, you know, when you talk about Gomi versus BJ Penn, I do know what you're saying, but Gomi has developed his stand-up skills so much more since that fight. You know, that was at a point in his career where he had started to do that, but I think people forget that early in his career he was a notorious ground-and-pound kind of fighter, and that's how he'd always,
yep,
he'd win a very bland sort of unanimous decision sort of victories, etc. You know, and whether or not he's worked enough on his jiu-jitsu, I think after he was tapped out by Aurelio, it kind of came out, so to speak, that he actually, apparently, Gomi hasn't worked a great deal on submission escapes, etc., that because of his wrestling background, he was always comfortable that he wouldn't wind up on his back a serious amount of time and develop the stand-up skills, keep the fight standing. And obviously against Aurelio, that was his downfall. So it'll be interesting to see how much he's worked on that and whether or not, I mean, Aurelio didn't have a great deal of difficulty getting him to the mat in their first encounter. So I'm going to go with Gomi as well on this. I think he'll be able to implement his own game plan rather than succumbing to Aurelio's, but I think it is going to be a close fight again, and be interesting. It would be very interesting to see if Aurelio wins, you know, what Pride does with Gomi from that point on, because he is clearly one of their top stars there. There's no question about it.
Well, I think they have a lot invested in him. He's the first Japanese champion in Pride, and I think that means a lot, you know, for them to be able to promote, especially in Japan, the lighter Bushido cards, and maybe that's why, maybe they see Bushido as more of a Japanese product. I still don't understand why they're not pushing a product that is just as good or maybe even better than the traditional Pride cards in North America. But I think that's very, very important, and I guess that's one of the reasons why they quote-unquote protected him, you know, in non-title bouts and things like that.
Kazuo Masaki versus Paulo Filho. This is going to be another great fight. For me, it's, even though Masaki, I think, has really been proving himself in the last year or so, that his first encounter with Dan Henderson really showed that he was going to be a great fighter, and I think maybe people didn't give him his due at that point, but they're certainly doing that now, or one would hope he's getting the credit that he deserves. But that being said, Paulo Filho has just, every fight that I've seen him be in, no one has ever really been able to stop him from doing what he does best, and that's taking people down and staying on top. And there's one, you know, it's so true, when you've got a black belt, an advanced black belt in jiu-jitsu, who's able to stay on top from that top position, you know, these guys are just next to impossible to sweep, next to impossible to submit. And you know, it's virtually the point with Philo, when he gets someone down and stays on top, you're almost like in your mind, you're like, well, that's it. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, well, that's it. And that's just
fight. You know, it's very much like watching the, and he's been compared to a little of Rona.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's an very apt comparison. Although Rona's shown a little bit better stand up in his last couple of fights, but I think the feeling in that is that exactly that's the kind of fight you're going to be in for. But Philo, the question for Philo is, with Kang having the potential to put Gono away early, does Philo want to fight two fights like that? Does he want to fight for 30 minutes in one night like that? And this will be the interesting question, because if we don't just simply look at these as individual fights, if you look at these as this guy wants to advance two fights in one night, is that what Philo's going to want to do? You know, he's not. I don't think he's going to want to stand with Misaki. And the question is, if he can take Misaki down, is he going to take a lot of punishment in doing it? You know, and is he going to take the fight and win a decision, even if it's a decision? You know, is that the correct strategy to go into this fight with?
Yeah, no, and that's a very good point, Brendan. I'm very, very impressed with you right now. Excellent. Well, job well done. But no,
made me spit coffee out of my nose.
No, that is a... Are you okay there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm all right.
It's a good thing you work at a hospital. No, that is a really good point, and to be honest, I hadn't really thought that through until right now, which is kind of embarrassing, but that is an excellent point, and you would have to think that, for sure, his corner and the game plan will have to be to try to put Misaki away as soon as possible, because you're absolutely right. He's not going to want to, you know, fight him for 15 minutes or 20 minutes even. I guess it would only be 15. The first fight's only one 10-minute round. Second round's 5 minutes, right?
So yeah.
Be 15 minutes, but still, regardless, you're right, especially if Kang's able to put away Gono quickly. Is that what he wants to do? And do you think Kang's going to be able to put Gono away quickly? Is that... the way what your prediction is going to be?
I think that's got to be his strategy. He certainly has the tools to do it. He's got no reason to hang with Gono any longer than he has to. And I think Gono, I guess the last time we saw Gono really be swarmed was against Hector Lombard, the Cuban judoka and boxer, who actually had some good success with basically just swarming him in the first part of their fight. Although Lombard couldn't put it away and Gono turned the tables on him, I think Kang has a few more tools than Lombard and will actually be able to basically keep the fight standing and hopefully put Gono away if he wants to advance and advance safely into the finals.
All right. Well, so then we're obviously picking Kang Philo for the final championship fight, and you know, for myself, this is going to be a really great fight, and it's hard to say who's going to come out on top in that fight. I mean, they're both... Dennis Kang hasn't lost a fight now in something like 3 years. He's been on a tremendous roll. Paulo Filho has never lost. From watching both fighters a lot, and especially Dennis, and following his career, I would have to say that Paulo Filho's got to be the favorite, just for the simple fact that he can just be so dominating as far as getting someone on the ground, etc. And if there's any fighter who can give Paulo Filho a run for his money as far as stopping a takedown or trying to submit him, it would be Dennis Kang. But I think Paulo Filho probably will be able to get the win through a very conservative game plan.
It's my birthday this month, and so as a birthday present to myself, I've granted myself the ability to pick with my heart and not with my head. So this is very important to me this month, so I got to go with Kang. But that's not necessarily not an unhead pick. I think Philo, the fights that you've seen of Philo's and Pride, I don't think he's ever fought anyone with the same resources as Kang. So Kang is as well a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He's certainly no stranger on the ground. He's got more tools than Philo, more ways to win. And I think the important thing is that I don't think Philo's going to be able to manhandle Kang in the way that he's manhandled other Japanese fighters. So I'm picking Kang in the final to win, but I know if Philo does win, he's got one way to win, but I think Kang's got a lot of ways to win. So
I gotta go with Thilo, or I gotta go with Kang in the final on this one, which is I'll attribute it to a hard pick because I think if anything, what Thilo is like a Rona is just tough to beat. But I think Kang may be the Shogun to Thilo's Rona. Does that make sense?
I don't know, dude. It's still early, and I'm not sure I followed you on that one, but. As far as your analysis, I do understand what you're saying. Anyone who says that Dennis Kang has no chance to win this fight is crazy. I mean, he clearly has probably the better stand-up than Paulo. He, as far as their wrestling capabilities, I agree with you. I don't think he's going to be able to be manhandled like so many of the other opponents that Thilo's faced.
I think Thilo has built up his reputation in being such a dominant ground-and-pounder because he's never really fought any of the American style fighters. And Kang doesn't come from a wrestling background, and I don't think he has overwhelming strength, but probably, you argue that the strongest guys that Thilo's fought are probably Chonin, who's not overwhelmingly strong, or someone like
Ninja.
Sulev, yeah. Maybe, but again. Not overwhelmingly dominant in terms of wrestler. He's fought Sakurai, but Sakurai, is naturally a lot smaller than he is. So, I don't know. He's made that reputation against a lot of smaller, weaker opponents. So, I don't think I definitely don't think he's going to be able to manhandle Kang. And that includes even if he does get a takedown or two, I don't think he's going to be able to keep Kang down.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to it, watching it 1 week from tomorrow, knowing the results. But I'm not going to. Let's not get into that tirade once again. Let's avoid that altogether. Are you going to go see Borat this weekend, man?
I've heard... this is one of these things that's been ruined for me because I've heard such overwhelming positive response about the movie. And I love Ali G. I love Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
I think he's just phenomenal. But I've heard things like, this is the funniest movie ever made type of thing.
Yeah.
So that can't help you. It can't help you keep your in my month of playing it with my heart and not with my head. I got to stop listening to reviews like this.
I totally know it. I'm exactly the same way, man. I hate that. Like people just get you so psyched up, and then you go and see it, and you're like, "What? Like it was all right, I guess, but it wasn't that good." All right, well, let's wrap this up, Paul. It was a good show. We apologize. We had one of our interviews fall through, so. Just had to go with the Dean Thomas interview, which was fantastic on its own, but this outro has
been for four shows.
This outro has become very long-winded, so let's wrap it up.
Good morning, Q Kelsey.
Yes, have a good day.
As they say, don't let the bed bugs bite.
We'll talk to you later, buddy.
Bye-bye.